Welcome to Random Trek, the podcast where I, Scott McNulty, watch a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. And today's non-random guest is the incomparable Lex Friedman, who once in a while is on the incomparable. Lex, how are you?
Hi, Scott. I'm good. How are you?
I am fantastic because we're going to talk about Star Trek, something that I know you love very much.
Yes, yes. I don't know if that's true. As this was the first ever episode of Star Trek that I watched in my entire life.
Which I find shocking.
It's not hyperbole. I mean, let's not forget, I am famous for the things I haven't seen.
That is true. So why don't you tell the folks what they might know you from?
So you might know me. I used to host a podcast called Unprofessional. I co-hosted that with my friend Dave Wiskus. More recently, I am of three podcasts. I do a daily podcast that stars me talking about me. That one's called Your Daily Lex. And I am on the Incomparable Podcast Network. I do Not Playing with Dan Morin, wherein we watch movies that everybody else has seen, but that we have not. Just today, as we record this episode, I introduced Dan Morin to Glengarry Glen Ross. So that was exciting.
I have not seen that.
And I also do a podcast with Johns, Moltz, and Armstrong called Turning This Car Around about fatherhood. So people might know me from any of those many, many podcasts.
You're just all about the podcasting.
Yeah.
Always be podcasting.
See? Even though you haven't seen it, you can make the references.
I know the reference.
But I have this episode that we will discuss is the first episode of Star Trek I've ever seen. I did see the first of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, and that was the first Star Trek thing I had ever watched.
Now, can you explain how it is possible for a person who was raised in America, you were raised in America, is that correct?
I was, yes.
To not see any episodes of Star Trek or movies, any of them ever, in your entire adult life?
I don't know that I can explain it other than growing up, a lot of the times we watched what my parents wanted to watch. That was most of what watching happened. Mm-hmm. And they weren't Star Trek fans.
Well, that's fair.
And that was kind of it. So I never, ever saw any episodes. In fact, like when you told me which, and now I can't even remember, you told me which edition of Star Trek we were going to be watching or season or title. And I didn't know. I was like, okay, well, it's either going to be Kirk or Picard. And then I found out it was neither when I started watching. And it wasn't until I pressed play and started watching that I saw, hey, neither of those guys is in the credits.
That is a little shocking, Lex.
I was shocked that there was no Picard.
I can imagine. So the episode we watched, the title will tell people what we watched, was an episode from the first season of Enterprise.
Right.
And as many of the Star Trek fans who are listening will groan as they realize that, in fact, this is the first episode of Star Trek you have ever seen, and it comes from the first season of probably the least liked series of Star Trek.
But it was nice that the is it Scott Bakula? The
guy from Bakula, yes.
The guy from a show I have seen many episodes of where he jumps into people's
Murphy
bodies.
Murphy Brown?
No, where he jumps into people's bodies.
Quantum Leap.
Quantum Leap. I've seen many Quantum Leaps.
You couldn't remember the name of the show, though.
So I got to sort of view this as Quantum Leap fan fiction. Like, hey, look where he's left now. He's in Captain Kirk's body. Well, I'll tell you, I didn't like the theme song, but then I saw John Billingsley's name in the credits, and I got excited all over again.
Oh, you're
because I like him.
You're a John Billingsley fan?
I've seen him in things that I liked. Not stuff that he's famous for, but like he was in Prison Break, and I liked him there, and he was on The Nine, and I liked him there. So I was like, oh, Billingsley. And then he was slightly hard to recognize on the show, but I figured it out.
That's right. He's Dr. Phlox.
And I I don't know if this makes me racist or what, but for a while
I was wondering, I don't even know what it is.
For a while I was wondering if he was a Klingon because he had the weird head, but then I found out later during the course of the episode that Klingons are bad guys, and like they wouldn't have a bad guy on staff as their doctor. That would be very foolish. So I decided he must be some other kind of non-human form.
They have had very few interactions with Klingons in this series. And so the episode that we're going to talk about, now that we've all kind of digested the fact that Lex has never seen any Star Trek except for J.J. Abrams, which one did you see? The movies?
The first one.
Okay.
I believe it was simply called Star Trek.
That is correct.
In which, the lens flare edition.
Yes, which old Spock meets new Spock.
Right.
And the universe changes.
Yeah. just one of those days.
It happens a lot on Star Trek. And so we are watching, well, we're discussing, we've already watched, episode 14, apparently, of season 1, Sleeping Dogs.
Yeah.
Enterprise, that's the name of the show. And so we have now the things we have learned. Jean-Luc Picard is not in this one.
No.
And Dr. Phlox is not a Klingon.
Right. And, you know, it opened with target practice. And so yes. I thought, like, the ship was cool. Mm-hmm. And then I was very quickly realizing that there was no Picard or Kirk. And I, the next question I wrote down mm-hmm. was, do all Star Treks need a pointy ear person? Because I believe that the... And it turned out that one... well, there was somebody who wasn't a person who I think was some kind of robot. And I thought maybe she was in the same family as Data or something.
Who wasn't a person? Who...
The short-haired woman on the... That'll get it. Well.
So to Paul... Right. The one with the pointy ears. She is not a robot.
Well, she seemed to not have feelings or emotions.
See, this is. I am glad that I can be your mentor through the Star Trek universe, Lex.
Okay, I'm ready to learn.
All right. Well, you know, kneel at my knee, and I will give you wisdom.
Okay.
So T'Pol is. I could see how you could make this mistake. T'Pol is a Vulcan, much like Spock.
Okay.
And so the Vulcans suppress their emotions and hold up logic as their most valued asset.
Got it. Well, I thought she seemed like, I consider, and this is probably like, this is just the worst thing I could say. This is as bad as comparing or as conflating Star Trek and Star Wars. But I consider Data and Spock to be kind of in the same wheelhouse in terms of not being human, but being very human-esque. And I felt that I knew that she was in that same circle on the Venn diagram. So that was at least good.
I think that that's a valid thing to say. That's not racist.
Okay.
Fake racist or space racist, I suppose, would be the...
Spacist, right.
Yeah, you're a spacist. So Hoshi, who is the Asian woman, who is the kind of the communications officer.
See, I have her as the translator. But yeah, communications officer makes more sense.
She is a linguist as well. Mm. It starts off with her and Malcolm Reed, who is the kind of the weapons officer on the Enterprise, tactical officer, doing target practice in some weird room on the Enterprise, which does not seem suitable for target practice, really. But they're doing it.
But they say that he kind of... disclaims it by saying that she was firing non-live rounds or blanks or something.
That's right, so that she couldn't blow a hole in the hull, which makes sense. He also mentions that these are new phasers, that you don't have to worry about particle drift, which made me laugh. Because
Jeff, I enjoyed that as well.
Really? I don't think the particles drift that much. but once again, I'm not a spaced... I am not a spacist like Lex, nor am I a space weapons expert. So
now, in that same scene, the British guy, his cold seems like it's going to be a key plot point and seems like it's going to be worrisome. It doesn't really matter much.
No, but it gives us a chance to enjoy how poorly he can fake sneeze.
Yes, and their science is very weird because the doctor says, or somebody says, that it's a cold. He says, I guess, it's a cold that was caused by a virus. Yeah. And it's my understanding that's not how colds work.
Well, in the future, that's how colds work. Apparently. And so their practice is interrupted because they drop out of warp because they Captain Archer, who is Scott Bakula, wants to survey a Class 9 gas giant, as you do.
Yes. And I wrote down many, many times in various incarnations, what the hell is a gas giant? And I never learned. At no point did the episode educate me.
Well, Saturn is a gas giant.
Okay.
It's a gaseous planet that is very large. And
so this is something that the show shouldn't have taught me, but science.
Yes, you should have known this already. But that's okay. You're not a science guy.
I thought it was
guy.
In the Star Trek universe. I didn't realize.
No. It's a real thing. It's a real thing. And so the backstory is that the Enterprise, of course, is a ship of exploration. So they're exploring. Yes. And so... Captain Archer has decided that they want to explore this planet because that's what he does. He's the captain. He can do what he wants. No one's going to stop him. He's got faith of the heart. And so after they've stopped at this gas planet, the theme song plays. It is awful. everybody hates it. It should never be in this show, but it is. Every other Lex, you haven't seen any other series, but all the other series have lovely orchestral kind of themes that have no words.
Right.
There is a voiceover in the original series in The Next Generation, but no singing. But sadly, someone decided to be hip and appeal to the kids. We should have a super crappy love ballad.
Yeah, it was not good.
No.
And this was my only time hearing it, and I knew right away it was not good.
Well, that's because you have taste.
Thank you.
Whoever wrote and performed and approved that song does not.
No, they were all terrible.
Yes, but it survived, so Enterprise was on for 4 seasons, and every season has that awful sound.
Well, they were all in at that point.
They couldn't admit defeat. It's true.
So it was sometime after the credits. They discover, well, you have to tell me, I guess, but they discover, I didn't quite see, I thought that the gas giant and this seemingly crashed or suffering Klingon ship were mm-hmm. somehow related, but I don't quite understand how. I know that the ship was crashed and sinking and that was bad, but I didn't yes. understand how it connected to the gas giant.
So they shoot a probe into the gas giant. They find out, oh no, there are life forms and some kind of mysterious ship. Which turns out to be a Klingon ship, although they couldn't identify it for whatever reason. And so the Klingons, we find out, have used the gas giant to hide. They were hiding from the people. So the Klingons are a warrior race, as we find out throughout this episode.
Yes.
And they
they're not very nice.
They're not nice. But they are honorable, and they like to kill things. You know, who doesn't?
America.
That's right. And so they had just raided an outpost, and they were being pursued by the folks they had raided. So they decided they would hide in this gas giant. But they didn't know, which we will find out later, is that they stole some ale from this outpost.
Right.
And drinking their victory, they did not know that the ale was poisoned.
Yeah.
So they were hoisted by their own petards.
Suckers.
Exactly. So they find the ship, and they decide they are explorers. They should send somebody over to check it out and maybe help, because they have scanned and they see here. They don't hear. They have discovered faint biosigns on the ship, so they want to help whoever's trapped there, because that's what they do.
Somehow, Hoshi volunteers to go with them, and somebody else had said, we want Hoshi to come with us. So it all worked out nicely. Like, she finally got brave enough to go on a expedition, which I guess previously she wasn't into.
That's right. She is nervous about the whole thing. She didn't really want to be on the Enterprise.
Right. Seems like a strange career choice if she's not into it, but whatever.
Well, you know, she is Starfleet. She wants to go up in the ranks, and the best way to do that is to go explore space, apparently. And so she left her desk job behind and jumped onto an incredibly dangerous ship.
It turned out they really needed her. Like, had she not gone, they were doomed.
Yes, that is true, because Hoshi, as we find out, speaks and kind of reads Klingon.
Yes. And knows some really impressive Klingon words, by the way.
She does. Some impressive and random Klingon words.
She knows the Klingon for photon torpedoes, and I guarantee you that the average person who knows Klingon doesn't know how to say photon torpedoes. That's my guess, at least.
And even better than that, she had never heard the phrase photon torpedo before,
yeah.
And yet she could translate it. She had no idea what they were, but she could translate the phrase.
Right. I can't say photon torpedoes in any language other than English.
That is a deficiency.
Yeah, well,
I can say it in Swedish.
I can say it in Pig Latin.
I had no idea you knew so many languages, Lex.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And so, to Paul, who is not a robot, and Malcolm, who has a cold... So he goes to see Dr. Phlox about his cold before he goes off to his little outing, right? And that's where we see space tissues, which amused me because they're just tissues. And Dr. Phlox says, well, you have a cold. There's not much I can do for you. Have a nice day. And that is really the extent, pretty much. Well, John Billingsley does come back later and say some things about the Klingon.
Yeah, oh yeah, he comes back.
He has a key, but a very small part in this episode. So Malcolm and T'Pol and Hoshi suit up, and we are given a scene in which Hoshi is uncomfortable with her suit, and T'Pol says, well, if you don't want to come with us, you can stay here. And Hoshi's like, no, I just want to, you know, make sure I know everything's working before I go off into a strange situation, which is reasonable, I think.
Totally fair. I was comfortable with that. I appreciated it. And I was only kind of disappointed that they didn't beam down.
Yes. So this takes place before the original series. And so they do have a transporter. So they could have beamed down, but they don't trust it.
Yeah, so, well, I can understand. It would have, you know, had they beamed, they would have invalidated most of the fear in the episode.
That is true. It would have really undercut the whole premise of the
episode.
Well,
guys, we're just going to beam you back. Everything's fine.
All right.
Fret not.
We'll beam everybody else who's on that ship aboard, too, and problem solved. Let's go. Next gas giant, please.
Yeah. So that worked out.
It did. That their mistrust for the transporter did work out. No one even suggested the transporter. That's how much they mistrust it. So they all pile into a shuttlecraft. They find this vessel that they cannot identify, even though, you know, from someone who's been watching Star Trek for many years, I could identify it as a Klingon vessel.
That's really impressive to me, actually.
It's pretty impressive. They dock, which is, this is my main one. I have some problems with this episode, but this is a big one. So they have, they're on a Federation shuttle pod, right? And they are going to a completely alien ship, and yet
it docks.
It docks. The docking mechanisms are the same, and they even say that they are interfacing with the docking system, so their software can talk to one another, which seems far-fetched, even for a show about people in space.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think they had open standards.
No, I don't think so.
So yeah, you're right. That is strange. It did not bother me in the moment, but yes. Well, also because I didn't know what kind of ship it was at the time.
I knew it was a Klingon ship. I was like, that's not a Federation ship.
Shenanigans.
That's right. I question everything that's happening. I sent a stern letter to the writer.
And it was at this moment when they got on and they realized that it was a Klingon ship. That was when I realized that Billingsley couldn't be a Klingon because Klingons were bad and they didn't like it. And then when I realized, when they started, this is the first time it could happen. But, you know, so as you know, and I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, but when they get on the ship, they find all these kind of passed out Klingons there.
They do.
They detect them, I could say. And I was like, oh, that's the sleeping dogs. And I thought it was kind of spacious that they were calling the Klingons dogs. But that was when I got the episode title. Those were the sleeping dogs.
They were the sleeping dogs. And they should, T'Pol argues they should let them lay. But they don't. Because that's not what Federation people do.
Right, that would also be a boring episode.
Let's go. So they figure out they're on a Klingon ship. This is where Malcolm's cold comes into play, because he doesn't have to smell the stench of the Klingon ship, apparently, because he's
stuffed
up.
I was curious, was it stinky because of of the partying and the whatever had happened to them to make them fall ill? Or was it stinky because Klingons just are a smelly race?
I think, now, I've never smelled a Klingon.
You know, if you didn't use episode titles as episode titles, that would be a good title.
Well, that is true. I've never been to a Star Trek convention, so I've never even smelled someone who's dressed up like a Klingon. But judging by appearances, which one shouldn't, I know, they strike me as perhaps having a musk about them.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know. And plus, we see they spent a lot of time exploring the kitchen and food stores on the ship.
Oh, yeah. The food was pretty gross. They did a nice job with the gross food.
So I imagine that has stunk up the place as well.
Yeah.
So they figure out, oh, boy, we're on a Klingon ship, and everybody's unconscious. And T'Pol says, well, we should just let them die, because that's what Klingons would want. And so they talk to the Enterprise and they explain the situation. Captain Archer says, well, you're sinking into the gas giant and the pressure is building, so you have 20 minutes to figure out if you can help them report back.
And while they're working on that, I think there's a commercial break, but then while they're working on that, there's a Klingon who steals their shuttle pod.
Yes, that's right. So there's a Klingon, she is hiding. And this is the first scene we get of the food stores, because this Klingon is hiding in the freezer.
She's hungry.
She is cold and hungry. Right. She sneaks out, and this is the point at which three armed Federation officers allow their shuttle to be stolen by one partially frozen, unarmed Klingon.
So I had several issues there. First, you know, later on, we see that they have a lot of trouble figuring out a ship that's not in their language, but apparently she speaks perfect English because she read whatever control she had on their ship to take it off, and, like, with no hesitance at all.
Yep, she's out of there.
And they did not seem nearly upset enough when their shuttle pod took off. I was surprised at how chill everybody was. Oh, she stole that pod. Those darn Klingons. Like, it seemed like I was watching a sitcom called Those Darn Klingons at that moment.
Yes, and even so she gets back. We'll skip ahead a little. She ends up on the Enterprise because the Enterprise says, oh, look, the shuttle pod is leaving and trying to go out into open space. And she seems – the shuttle pod is also broadcasting in Klingon. So that seems odd.
Yeah.
So maybe we should stop it. So they stop it. And in a very – so they stop it and they bring it aboard.
And they catch it like it was nothing. Like, that was very easy.
That's true. But they also have very poor planning because they catch it, but they don't seem to have security ready for when they bring it on board. So they bring it on board without anyone being in the docking bay. And she manages to open the shuttlecraft, and they have to kind of like sneak up, and it's very poorly lit there for some reason.
Right.
And so you think, oh, maybe she escaped the shuttle pod and she's not lurking in the Enterprise. But turns out she was, in fact, in the shuttle pod, but she does get the drop on one security officer. But then someone phasers her into stunness, and she drops.
Yes.
And where she then – she comes up later in the episode. She regains consciousness, and she says very clearly – we have never encountered your race before. And so that is leads me to believe that she does not, in fact, speak or read English.
And I forget, they have to do something so they can understand her?
So they have a universal translator on the Enterprise, which can only translate, apparently, spoken language because they can't read the consoles on the Klingon ship with the universal translator, which is why they have Hoshi with them.
Right. She's the universal translator human form.
She can read. While their stupid technology can only translate spoken words, which seems like a big negative to the universal translator, if you're asking me.
But yeah, well, I'm so
a space engineer.
At some point, when they've seen that there's a problem, they decide we're going to have to. And I might be getting ahead because I think I got more engulfed in the episode and I took worse or fewer notes. But engrossed in the episode, I should have said. But so at some point they decide, like, well, we're just going to take our ship down to them to rescue them.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take – if they could do that, why didn't they do that originally? Why did they have to send just three of them down in the little ship? Why couldn't they just take the big ship down?
Well, they didn't want to risk the big ship. Like, that's a big risk to just take the whole ship in there. So they just send a little shuttle pod to check it out and see what it is because they didn't know what it was at first. And then Captain Archer says, okay, well, I'm going to take the shuttle pod and rescue – the folks that are still on the Klingon ship. And then they say, oh no, it has fallen deeper into the gas giant atmosphere. So at the pressure it's at now, the shuttle pod will be crushed. So we can't let you do that, Captain.
Yeah, like, right.
Well, we'll take the whole ship.
I also made a note that targs are cool. I think that must have been the food that they keep fresh, like alive.
Yes, those are the pig dog things.
Yeah, I like those.
You're a targ booster.
Yeah.
This is the, here's a fun fact for you. This is the first appearance of fully digitally rendered targs on a Star Trek episode. So,
oh, targs have appeared in many episodes. They weren't a one-off for this episode.
I would say they appear in a couple of episodes. Gotcha. They are not a recurring character.
Nobody ever adopts a targ or anything.
No, that's not like a Next Generation episode where Riker adopts a targ and has to raise it on the Enterprise. Although I would watch that episode, but it didn't happen.
Hey, I eventually figured out that the one is that I forget what her name is, but that's a Vulcan because I wrote it. Oh, it's a Vulcan, not a robot. What's a Vulcan though? So that was what my notes said.
Oh, well, there you go. You found out T'Pol is a Vulcan.
T'Pol, that's right. Yeah.
Yes. And so Archer says, okay, well, let's take the whole darn ship to rescue three people, which seems like a bad command decision, but he decides to do it.
I mean, but that's kind of what we love in commanders in, you know, film and TV, right? We want them to make those bad decisions.
No man left behind.
Right. Now, the captain has to – so, again, not having realized that this was early, this was predating other Star Trek series I was, how do they not know about Klingons? And the captain reads 900 pages of Klingon history in minutes. And I want to know, one, how did he do it so fast? And was it like some kind of sci-fi thing? And two, what are pages in this context? Because it wasn't a book.
Well,
it was like digital.
That is true. But it has, he was reading it on a Kindle and it has real page numbers.
Okay.
So he knew how many pages it was. So this is an interesting question because in this universe, well, in this series, right, this is very early. So the humans are getting most of their information from the Vulcans because the Vulcans have been worldly. And in fact, the first contact with humans, with extraterrestrials, was with Vulcans. So they kind of introduced us to the wider galactic society. So the Vulcans have shared their database with the humans, which includes 900 pages about Klingons, and in fact includes the schematics for the very ship that they found, but no one thought to check, before, which I found odd. You think they might do a little search and say, hey, let's see if we can, based on the visual looks of this ship, look it up in our giant database of alien ships, and we can, you know, solve a problem right now.
Right.
But they don't do that. But I do not know. I assume Captain Archer was just saying that they had 900 pages, but he didn't read all of those pages.
I see.
He was making conversation with Trip, who is the engineer.
It does seem, I mean, I don't know. He was trying to know as much as he could about their culture so that he could outsmart them, and he was going to think like a Klingon and all that.
That was his plan.
Right. And for a while, I was like, how is he thinking like a Klingon? He's just talking. But then I eventually got it as their conversation progressed. But it was, I did not think that was the best part of the episode in terms of how it was scripted.
No, it was not. And so back on the Klingon ship, they are trying to figure out what happened. They figure out that they already figured out why everyone's unconscious, but they don't know why the ship is, you know, stuck. So they figure out there's something wrong with the plasma injectors or something, and so they need to go fix that. With the port fusion injector. I'm sorry.
Look, how did you get that wrong?
I know, it's a big mistake. And so Reed is feeling lightheaded. T'Pol thinks he's dehydrated. And so they go off to get some water. And so Hoshi and T'Pol then go off to the galley once again to look at weird food. They see some gah, which are worms, which is a notable Klingon food, often appears very often in Star Trek. And this is where we encounter Targs.
Yeah.
And they are scary, and they bark, and then they close the door.
And then they're like, well, they like their food really fresh. I like that on a spaceship, you're going to travel with animals so that you can slaughter them so that they taste better. I like the priority there.
That's how Klingons roll, man.
Yeah.
And then Hoshi has a panic attack, to which T'Pol manages to calm her by giving her a meditative exercise.
Imagining that was also really weird.
I thought it was a nice little scene, but kind of weird as well, where she tells Hoshi to imagine she's on an ocean and she can control the ocean. And
right, she's controlling the waves. And Hoshi's like, whatever you're doing, it's not working. And then 10 seconds later, that was amazing.
It's perfectly calm.
Yeah.
And T'Pol says, well, I'll teach you how to do that when we get back on the ship. And I thought, what are you going to teach her? You already showed her exactly what to do. What more is there to do? But I don't know. I'm no meditative expert, so I could be wrong. And now, in what is possibly the worst special effects of the episode, we see some of the Klingon ship hull collapse because the pressure is mounting, and it just looks awful. It is not good. And Reed, who is Malcolm, the British guy with the cold.
Is your house on fire, by the way?
No, I just live in Philadelphia.
Nice. Okay.
The sirens are just a lovely background noise for all of the podcasts I record.
Just making sure.
I'm fine. Someone else is having a bad day, but I'm okay. It is an unusual amount of sirens, though. Generally, there are less sirens than that, but whatever. What can I do? So Malcolm says, we're going to use the weapons and blow up a bunch of stuff so that we can knock ourselves out.
To push ourselves up, right? I thought that was a clever plan. And they're like, we've got to use more torpedoes. And like, you can't use more. We're going to kill. And we can't blow them up too soon or we'll blow ourselves up. And he's like, well, if we wait too long, we're going to die anyway. So
it's a nice dilemma.
Get with the program. Yeah.
Yeah. T'Pol is a real downer in this episode. She's like, we should just let them all die. We shouldn't touch anything. And then she's like, well, we shouldn't use any of these plans. We should just let ourselves get crushed. She's having a bad day, I think.
Yeah.
And then back on the Enterprise, they've decided, well, we can't take the Enterprise in because it is sunk even lower into the atmosphere, and the hull plating will buckle if we try.
Right.
So let's modify a shuttle pod with a couple of beams, and apparently that's good enough.
Yeah.
Which just seems odd. Also odd is that the chief engineer, Tucker, and the captain of the ship are the two that are putting these beams into the shuttle pod. You would think they'd have some crew members might be less important doing the manual labor.
But you would be wrong.
You would be wrong. And this is where, Archer tells about the 900 pages he's read, and suddenly he thinks like a Klingon, so he goes to sickbay and tells the Klingon lady what has happened, and they've cured her of this virus that was put into the wine, and he basically appeals to her honor and says it would be unhonorable to let her comrades die. So he...
Now, was the drink poisoned, or was it simply poison if you happen to be of Klingon biology?
I think it was poisoned in general.
Oh, see, I took it the other way, but I'm sure you are right.
I don't know. It could be a Klingon-specific poison, but I think it was poisoned specifically because of them. It was meant for the Klingons. I don't know if it was Klingon-specific, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And so the female Klingon's like, yes, we did just imbibe in a bunch of alcohol that we stole from someplace, so your story kind of checks out. So, okay, I will go into the shuttle pod and help rescue my vessel. And as soon as they are going into the atmosphere, they get a bunch of... They sense a bunch of explosions because Reed is exploding photon torpedoes in an effort to raise the ship up. And at this point, he's like, well, the first two failed. And he's like, well, I guess maybe this idea won't work. And Hoshi says, well, why don't we just shoot them all? And everyone's like, what? Hoshi, that would be very dangerous and very out of character for you. And she says, well, we got to get out of here. I didn't sign up to die on a Klingon ship. I want to die on a human ship if I have to die.
Right. I mean, if you're going to pick.
Yeah, you know. And so they say, okay, well, we'll explode all of the photon torpedoes 800 meters off. And she says, I was thinking 500. And everyone's like, whoa, Hoshi, where's this new daring come from? And so they do that.
Hoshi.
Exactly. They do that, and it raises them up a little, but not enough to escape. But luckily, Captain Archer is coming in with his Klingon friend, who will board the ship. And they get on board. The Klingon lady basically asks them to leave. She fixes the ship. They go back to the Enterprise. The little Klingon ship flies away. But before it flies away...
Did she really fix the ship? Because, like, how could she undo the damage done by all that pressure?
Well, she fixes the port injector, which is apparently the only thing that's keeping it from flying out of the... The gas giant.
But yes, they don't just leave. You were going to say.
That's true. They don't leave. So she's revived the rest of her crew, and everybody on the Enterprise is feeling pretty good about helping save these Klingons because they think, well, we're finally building a bridge of peace between our two races. Right. That is understood. They don't actually say that, but you think, okay, that's what they're doing. And then they get a hail from the Klingon ship, and you think, well, they're probably going to thank us for helping them.
Because
that's right. And the Klingon basically says, it is the Klingon captain, and he says, prepare to die, human scum. And Archer's all like, what? We just helped you. Why are you being so rude? How rude? Turns into a Full House episode. And the Klingon basically says, you sullied our ship by coming on board. You probably sabotaged it. We don't like you, and we're going to blow you up. And Captain Archer says, well, you were going to die a dishonorable death, and if you attempt to attack us, I'm just going to blow you up because your ship is damaged. So wouldn't you rather live than get blown up by a human? And the Klingon's like, you make a fair point, and flies away.
And so I thought that was approximately when the episode would end, but then there was another scene that was so weird.
Very, very weird. So this is another problem I had with Enterprise when I watched it. For the first episode is a two-part episode, and it includes a scene in which a decontamination chamber is used in combination with decontamination, which I apparently can't say, decontamination gel, which T'Pol and Tucker, who is the engineer, have to strip to their underwear and rub gel all over each other. In order to decontaminate themselves.
Right. But anything covered by underwear never needs decontaminating.
That's right. Nice. It's clear. So this episode, we see the return of the decontamination chamber in which Reed, Hoshi, and T'Pol are hanging out in their underwear getting decontaminated, I guess.
Right.
And the problem...
There was no gel, though.
There was no gel. This was a gel-less decontamination. Apparently, if you're on a Klingon ship, you don't need to break out the gel.
But they're having, like, it seems to me they're treating it like a sauna, right? But, the idea is they're enjoying it so much. They're so comfortable in there. They're like, nah, we think you should decontaminate us one more time, Billingsley. They didn't call him Billingsley. They knew what his name was.
Right.
But they're like, don't make us come out. We want to keep up in the decontamination sauna. Right.
We want to hang out in here because it's hot and we are in our underwear. And I had a problem with this, not because, I mean, obviously, they are three physically attractive people, so it's clear why you'd want them to hang out in their underwear as long as possible. But A, that's not very Star Trek-y, if you ask me.
No.
But B, if you are a giant nerd like I am, you start thinking about, well, if you need to decontaminate, Captain Archer was also on the Klingon ship, so shouldn't he be
that
in the decontamination
really
chamber?
Call. That's a really good call. And I don't think they needed to, you know what, though? I think the reason it's okay, I mean, you're right, they should have realized, obviously they should have realized that the captain had to go through it too, but I think it's like when we used to decontaminate astronauts when they came back from the moon. I think they assume they have to decontaminate, but in fact, they were wrong. That's my analysis.
I agree. I think it is unnecessary, but they don't know that.
Right.
So why is
the captain?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my other thought was, well, they had an actual Klingon on their ship for a while.
That is also a really good point.
Did they decontaminate her before they let her? Well, she was on.
They had to decontaminate the ship, right?
They'd have to. Everybody who had contact with the Klingon would have to be
Let's
decontaminated.
Let's all get in our underwear.
That's right. Everybody strip down, report
to
the
gel. Some of you go to the sauna.
That's right. The more attractive crew members, please use gel. All others, report to the sauna.
Yeah.
And then it ends with Hoshi saying, "Do you smell that?" And T'Pol saying, "No." And Hoshi says, "Exactly."
Exactly.
And they all laugh, and there's a freeze frame, and end credits.
Yeah.
Or roll credits, I suppose.
Yeah. And so, that was my first episode of Star Trek.
Well, that was not a great first episode of Star Trek, but it was certainly an episode of Star Trek.
And you pick these at random, right?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. Amazing. And so what I think you already said it once, but there's a lot of terminology coming here. What is Billingsley, given that he is not a Klingon and he's not a human?
He is a Denoblian.
Okay, whatever. And so he's a Denoblian.
Yep.
The ones who look like you and me, mm-hmm. only, you know, more attractive and in their underwear, are they humans?
They are humans.
Okay.
Well, T'Pol, also in her underwear, but she was a Vulcan.
She's a Vulcan who is like a human but is driven by logic and swallows her emotion.
That's right. And has pointy ears.
Yes, pointy ears.
Pointy
Which
ears.
The short-haired, pointy-ear one, is she like Data? That's what my notes say.
She is like Data in that Data has no emotions, but he has no emotions. She suppresses her emotions. She has them.
Different.
It is a fine difference, but it is a difference. And there
now,
are
all the different Star Treks, excluding the movies, but the TV series, are they all of one continuity?
Yes, they are.
Wow.
They are, in fact. So the J.J. Abrams movies are not. They're outside of that continuity. But all the movies, with the Next Generation and the original crew, they're all part of the same continuity.
Gotcha. So Tiberius Kirk, first name James, and
correct.
Jean-Luc Picard, they would know of the Bacula reign because he happened before they did.
That's right. Theoretically.
But since it was filmed afterwards, they didn't, they could have.
They would have known within the logic of the show.
Gotcha.
They would be aware of Captain Archer's antics, much like Jean-Luc Picard was aware of Captain Kirk's antics. Although he could be, because of course Captain Kirk, the original series was filmed long before the Next Generation.
My biggest disappointment, I guess, besides the fact that neither Picard nor Kirk was there, was there were no like major on ship scenes where like everything sways to the left and everything sways to the right and it's like turn the torpedoes to full blast. Like I wanted some of that and I didn't get that on the Enterprise.
You wanted some classic Star Trek space combat action.
Yeah, which did like I wanted them to fight those Klingons at the end. I was rooting for a battle.
There was no battle.
No.
Yeah, if I were not allowing random fate to pick the episodes that were assigned, and had I known, I knew that you were not a huge Star Trek fan. I didn't know that you had never seen any Star Trek shows whatsoever.
I wouldn't even say, by the way, that I'm not a huge Star Trek fan. I think I'm just neutral, having never been exposed. Had we not done this, I probably never would have seen Star Trek an episode.
This might start a love affair with Star Trek for you.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows?
I would have probably... My point is that this is not the episode I would have picked... if I wanted to, you know, encourage someone to watch more Star Trek.
I think I got what I deserved.
I mean, this is not the worst episode of Enterprise, I should point out. It's not a good episode of Star Trek, but it's not. Yeah, it's. I would say it's poor, but not
given
awful.
That you're a fan of the series in general, I would imagine that you find there are many more good episodes than not.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, this episode. The main problem I had with this episode was that I thought it was a missed opportunity, as I think many Enterprise episodes are, because I felt like, and you being kind of a virgin of Star Trek might have a good insight into this. I felt that the stakes in this episode seemed like they should have been very high, like you should be worried about these characters, but at no point was I worried about them,
right.
And frankly, I was a little bored, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. I didn't think that they were trying to ratchet up the level of anxiety, but I thought they failed every time they tried to do that. I don't know if you had a similar experience or not.
Yeah, I mean, the one point I had made earlier where nobody seemed all that alarmed when
right.
the Klingons stole their ship, and I was like, geez, you should be freaking out, and they weren't, so that made me mad. And then, you're right, although I didn't know as a newcomer, as a virgin in your language, Klingon.
That's right.
Klingons are... Anybody who knows Klingon is also very familiar with the concept of virginity. But the... I didn't know who the key characters were. I knew that Bakula wasn't going to be in trouble. Like, I didn't know the other actors or characters all that well. But at no point did I feel that anybody was in danger. So I shared that impression of yours.
Yes. And you know, even though I know who the main characters are, so I know that in general they are never really in danger, right. Because they are recurring characters. The onus is on the episode to make me think that they might be in danger, even though right. I know they aren't. And if you can't do that, it fails, especially when the whole premise of the episode is this, like, suspenseful, oh, they're on this ship that is about to be destroyed thing. So I think it has failed. It failed at that base level requirement, which the rest of the stuff in the episode doesn't really help.
Yeah.
Because if you take that out, it's an episode about a guy who has a cold and goes to work.
So a working man.
Exactly.
I will say I watched the entire episode on my iPad, mm-hmm. and I propped my iPad on two hands in the Vulcan salute the entire time.
Well, that is the perfect way to watch any episode of Enterprise, I think.
Yeah. And then nobody did the salute. So it was all the things I thought I knew, I did not know.
All the sweet, sweet Star Trek stuff you were hoping for, space battles, Vulcan salutes, robots... None of it was in this episode.
Shatner, nothing.
No. Yeah. There were Targs, though. So.
Right. I got Targs, and so plus. I'm fine.
That's
I
a
was
new,
well covered.
A new cool Star Trek thing. Well, Lex, thank you for watching this episode of Star Trek. I apologize for it being your first episode of Star Trek.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And if you ever want me to watch another one, I absolutely would. I have not sworn it off so far.
Next on Random Trek... TNG's Season 4, First Contact.